It's time for Comic Review Weekly, produced by Jackrabbit Studios in association with GravyBoy.com. Now here's your host, Andy Slott.
Hello there, comic book fans. Welcome to episode 25 of Comic Review Weekly, the podcast where you get the good, the bad, and the ugly of comic books, hosted by me, Andy Slaughter. Comic Review Weekly is brought to you by the creative minds at Jackrabbit Studios, home of Gravy Boy, the comic for folks who like a little hero and their heroes. Check it out at www.gravyboy.com. This week, we're going to look at the follow-up for the Star Wars Tag and Bink series. Also, we're going to take a look at the Villains United one-shot special from DC Comics. To start off with, we've got the second part of the Star Wars romp we reviewed a couple of weeks ago. It's Revenge of the Clone Menace, featuring Tag and Bink, written by Kevin Rubio with art from Lucas Marangan. Well, if you heard the review I gave the last chapter, you know how fond I am of this series. It's classic spoof humor dressed up in high-quality artwork, and it earns multiple rereadings. Last time, we ended with the destruction of the second Death Star, and Tag and Bink becoming one with the Force. So, how did this happen? I mean, Tag and Bink aren't Jedi, are they? With the beginning of Clone Menace, the reader witnesses the early childhood of both heroes, a couple of kids who have been blessed by a spattering of midichlorians that were not genetically inherited. How did they get them? Here's a hint. Anybody remember Palpatine's Darth Plagueis story from Episode 3? Well, it has something to do with that. Anyway, Tag and Bink are found by the Jedi Council and initiated into training. As the years go by, they turn out to be slow learners, not as advanced as Master Yoda and Mace Windu would like them to be. In fact, the two Padawans even resort to a little cheating to get by. In doing so, they accidentally download a computer virus into the mainframe of the Jedi Archives, resulting in some valuable loss of data. Tag and Bink decide to flee Coruscant rather than face punishment by the Jedi Order. Along the way, they have a run-in with Jango Fett and hop a transport off of Coruscant. This transport also happens to be carrying a certain young Jedi Padawan and his love interest, Senator Padme. Wackiness ensues. For anybody who hated the lame romantic dialogue of the prequel trilogy, you will get a real kick out of how Clone Menace treats the whole Anakin-Padme relationship. I totally didn't see this plot development coming, but sure as Tag and Bink were involved in important events in the original trilogy, they are involved here. A few years later, the two make their way back to Coruscant just in time for the extermination of the Jedi and Anakin's assault on the Jedi Temple. Do they escape? Well, yeah, we pretty much know they live on. But it's interesting to see just how the two troublemakers get out of being killed along with the rest of the Jedi. I'm not going to give away anything else. As with the rest of this series, Kevin Rubio's sense of humor and timing is as hot and sharp as the business end of a lightsaber. This book will have any Star Wars fan chuckling with delight. Lucas Marangan's art is magnificent. I wish I saw his name attached to more projects because I'd pick them up in a heartbeat. If your local comic shop does not order the Tag and Bink series, try going to one of the big chain stores, Barnes & Noble or Borders, as they tend to carry comics for the larger licensed properties like Star Wars. I don't care what anybody says, Star Wars Tag and Bink is a classic comic book run that will be long remembered by those who are lucky enough to get it. I give it 5 out of 5 stars. The second book we look at today is right off the presses, hotter than a sizzling skillet. If you are wary of spoilers, you may want to wait to listen to this bit, because right now we have the latest one-shot capping off Infinite Crisis, Villains United. Like the Villains United miniseries, this one-shot is written by Gail Simone with artwork by Dale Eaglesham. That mini, we actually did a review on it here at Comic Review Weekly a few months ago, was, in my opinion, the strongest one out of the four that led up to Infinite Crisis. I'm here to tell you that this one-shot carries on that trend as being the strongest and most relevant to Infinite Crisis out of all four. The time frame is after Infinite Crisis Issue 6, and all of the multiple Earths that Alex Luthor was sifting through have been merged back into a single Earth. New Earth. Whatever that means. Due to Connor Kent's sacrifice, Alex Luthor's tower has been destroyed and his plans ruined. But just like a Luthor, he always has another card up his sleeve. If you've been following this epic series so far, you will remember that Alex Luthor had been posing as Lex Luthor, the one we all know, to bring together an unprecedented society of villains. This society, made up of almost every villain in the DC Universe, was dedicated to unite against the superheroes of the world. Well, since he started mucking around with different Earths, Alex has neglected his society because he thought that they had already achieved his ends, which, by the way, was not to get back at the superheroes, but to collect specific metahumans he needed for his plan to create the perfect Earth. Now that his plan has failed, he's using the society again. His goal, to engineer a planet-wide jailbreak. Everywhere. Phase 1 of the plan begins in Gotham City, at Arkham Asylum. Oracle catches the situation and tries to find Batman and the regular heavy hitters to let them know, but as Infinite Crisis readers know, they are otherwise occupied. She manages to contact Martian Manhunter, who sets up a telepathic link with the lesser-known heroes across the world. Martian Manhunter's mental power, combined with Oracle's genius strategy, provides a worthy opposition to Luthor's plan. Oracle is able to contact heroes who haven't worn a costume in years and get them to join the escalating battle. It's a valiant effort, but Luthor's plan is too large, too immense in scope for them to stop it. Phase 1 brings the jailbreak from a few large institutions being broken into to hundreds of smaller breaks across the globe. Everyone is instructed to head to Metropolis, where the final battle will be fought. Thanks to some help from the Secret Six, the heroes learn of the villain's final stop and just barely make it to Metropolis in time to see the first wave of them approaching. They bring Phase 3 with them. Now, Phase 3 is the real kicker. The odds are already stacked against the ragtag team of heroes assembled to meet this threat, with heavy hitters like Sinestro, Bizarro, and Bane. It's going to be a tough enough fight. But Doomsday? Yeah, that's right. Phase 3 of Luthor's plan was breaking out Doomsday, the malevolent creature who killed Superman, from his prison deep within the surface of the Earth. All I can say is, wow. I cannot wait until issue number 7 of Infinite Crisis, that is. As if it wasn't already intense enough, this just raises the bar another few notches. Gail Simone has really weaved a tight story here. It's fairly crucial to the main storyline, but it really allows readers to look deeper into the hows and whys of an important event, the jailbreak, that will probably only be touched on in Infinite Crisis 7 before the carnage breaks. It was great, as a reader of the Villains United miniseries, to catch up on Catman, Deadshot, Scandal, Scandal's new girlfriend, and Ragdoll. Ragdoll, by the way, was thought to be dead the last time we saw him. I'm not a big reader of Simone's books. Really, this Infinite Crisis stuff is the only work of hers that I've ever read. But from this alone, I'm impressed. She really knows how to build up an epic battle and make the reader feel empathy for even the D-list characters of the DC Universe. The scene at the end, where the heroes are standing guard at Metropolis, is especially moving. It kind of reminds me of the scene in Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers, where the Rohirrim are awaiting hordes of Uruk-hai to assault their fortress of Helm's Deep. Only one question. How exactly did Black Adam get from the tower in Issue 6 to sitting on the throne of Kandak here? Dale Eaglesham's artwork is as splendid as before, if not more so. His pencil work is smooth and consistent. His characters do not suffer from the look-alike syndrome that affects some other comic book artists I've seen lately. Many action-filled panels can be found in this book, and Eaglesham manages to show it all without any confusion. Well, except for one minor nitpick, and that is, on the second-to-last page, there is a small panel showing Alex Luthor crying, saying how the Society will take the Earth for him since he can't make the perfect Earth, or something to that effect. Anyway, from the dialogue, yes, I can understand that this is Alex. but there needed to be an introductory or establishing shot of him, or something more, because as crucial to the story as he is, this is the only panel you see Alex in this whole book. I don't know, that little bit just bothered me a little. I mean, you see him as the Lex Luthor disguise that he wears, but not as Alex Luthor, the red-haired person. Other than that, this was great stuff. I give Villains United Special 4 stars out of 5. Well, everybody, that's it for another week of Comic Review Weekly. Thank you again for listening to our show. You can email me your comments and suggestions at andy@gravyboy.com. I would love to hear from you. I am always open to broadening my horizons and checking out new books, so if you have anything in mind that you would like to hear about on the show, please let me know. Join us next Monday for another new episode of Comic Review Weekly at www.gravyboy.com/CRW. I'm Andy Slaughter, wishing you happy reading.